Every law enforcement agency in the country deals with a variety of issues and problems internally and externally. They also have a variety of priorities they want to get done, goals and objectives. Now, one of those priorities needs to be the mental health and wellness of the brave men and women who go out and protect and serve every day. A lot of agencies are doing very well with this, but some agencies are falling through the cracks. And it often has to start with the highest echelons within a police organization or sheriff's department, i.e. the sheriff and undersheriff, police chief and other senior executives. If they're not on board with the mental health and wellness of their brave men and women, it's going to be much more problematic. You're going to love the next couple that's on my show, retired police chief Nick Metz and his wife, Dr. Sarah Metz. In this show, we're going to talk about the wide variety of mental health stigmas and other issues within police organizations and how we can overcome them. And then they're going to talk about the great services they are providing our brave men and women to continue to give back to our brave first responders. Retired Police Chief Nick Metz and his wife, Dr. Sarah Metz, next on the Criminal Justice Evolution Podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Patrick here. Thank you for tuning in. We know you got many options, but you keep coming back to the top-ranked Criminal Justice Evolution podcast. Top-ranked because of you, the listener and supporter. I appreciate you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. I am very grateful for you and the continuing success of this show. Big shout out to all the brave men and women working in the criminal justice field. Whatever you were doing, wherever you were at, thank you so much. And remember this, ignore the noise out there. What's going on with a lot of people not liking criminal justice professionals and police officers? Remember this, the vast majority of people love and adore you. You are honored, cherished, and above all, you are loved. Remember, come home safe and take care of each other. If you are in charge of your organization's extra duty program, I feel for you because I know what it's like to be in charge of a program like that and then at the same time juggling other responsibilities and priorities. I want to tell you about my friends at Extra Duty Solutions. Now, Extra Duty Solutions helps law enforcement agencies add efficiency and effectiveness to their extra duty programs while allowing them to focus on what really matters. And that's the safety of their citizens. They work with law enforcement agencies everywhere to help administer their extra duty programs. They can help with client interaction, scheduling, officer payments, feedback, and so much more. Their services are provided at no cost to the department and minimal cost to the clients, and programs can be customized to meet the goals and unique needs of any law enforcement agency. Folks, go to extradutysolutions.com. That's extradutysolutions.com and tell them Patrick from CJ Evolution sent you. On to this great show. Hello, everybody. So excited to have my next two guests on the show, Nick Metz and his wife, Dr. Sarah Metz. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Well, I am excited that both of you are here. We got a lot of important information and content that we're going to provide the listeners. But really quick, Dr. Sarah Metz, can you tell us a little bit about your background and what you're doing? I know your husband, Nick, works with you, and he's a former police chief, but tell us a little bit about you, Sarah.
Sure. So I got my doctorate degree from the University of Denver, and really since the beginning of my career about 15 years ago, I've been working with responders. I started out in the jail for a couple of years and then realized I liked working with the deputies more than the inmates. And so and have been working in mental health for responders ever since. And we opened up Code 4 Counseling, which is our private practice, about 4 years ago. So all day, every day, we take care of responders. We provide mental health to responders, their families. We do a lot of training, critical incident response, and absolutely love what I do. It's definitely a calling. You've got to have the right personality to serve these cultures. They're a pain in the ass some of the time, but yeah. It's very rewarding work. I love it.
Well, thank you so much for what you do. I wish there was millions of more people like you out there because our brave men and women who serve need all the help that they can get. Thank God there's a lot of resources out there, including yours. Go ahead, sir.
Well, Nick Metz, and I just retired from law enforcement after a little over 35 years. I spent my first 30 years with the Seattle Police Department, moving up the ranks and having been involved in a lot of different types of incidents, critical incidents, riots, you name it. And I retired from there as a deputy chief and became chief in Aurora back in the later part of 2014. And spent 5 years there, and was just a wonderful, wonderful experience. I've got mad respect for the women and men of the Aurora Police Department. Probably one of the best parts of having come here and working within the law enforcement community is also getting to know a lot of the other responders, you know, police and fire from around the region. That cooperation that we're so fortunate to have here, and people really working together. So over those years, I had the chance to work with a lot of folks from a variety of, you know, law enforcement agencies, fire agencies, you name it. And then probably the best thing was meeting this beautiful woman. And, we both shared a real passion in really wanting to make sure we took care of our responders and their families. Because one of the things I've noticed over my career is that when officers a lot of times would get into a bind or get in some serious trouble, a lot of times, you know, when you had a chance to sit down with them later, you found out that they were really going through some stuff, and they probably would not have involved themselves in those kinds of activities had they been getting the resources that they need. And so that's been basically been our mission.
Well, thank you so much, sir, again, for your dedicated service for so many years. And now you were the chief during the Aurora shooting, correct, sir?
The theater shooting? Yeah. I came in just about a year and a half after. So oh, okay. I came right when the trial was beginning.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Now, you, what do you think, Chief, for start with you, you've seen a lot of things in your career, in your long tenure, especially, you know, in patrol and in the upper echelons. I mean, I remember when I, you know, first started, you know, as a patrol officer, there wasn't a lot of, you know, peer support. There wasn't any peer support. We didn't have much as far as, you know, resources for our officers, you know, after they went through a critical incident, not even just going through a critical incident. I mean, things that they were struggling with. As you progress, Chief, from your lens, do you think we've made some positive strides, better strides than we have in the past, or I mean,
yeah, I think we've made some amazing strides, but I also feel like we've still got a long ways to go.
Yeah.
My first year with the Seattle Police Department, I was involved with two line of duty deaths, one involving an officer in my agency and then one involving a King County deputy, and then an officer in my squad who committed suicide. And I really didn't know anything about wellness at that time. And it really wasn't until a few years later that I realized I was carrying a lot of that stuff still with me, that I was still grieving with that. I just kind of like the old cliche, suck it up, move on.
Oh, yeah, I remember those, yeah.
Yeah, but I sucked that stuff in and I just put it in the back of my head, but it never went away. And so it wasn't until later that as I started to learn more and more about responder wellness that I realized we have to do more, and we can't, and Sarah's a big proponent of this, we can't just keep telling officers, if you need help, ask for it. We've got to go to them. And so, you know, coming up with different programs and things like that for the officers and their families is really important.
And I've seen a shift really even just in the last couple of years. You know, I've been pushing mental health services for a long time, but even early in my career, I would have clients come into the office, and before they would either sit in their car and they would say, is there anybody from my agency anywhere in the building? They didn't want to be seen. It was this sneak them in, sneak them out kind of mentality. And now at our office, it's a party at our office. Like clients each other in the hall, like, hey, how you doing? They're hugging each other. They're sitting around talking, grabbing coffee at our office in just this very casual, this is just something we all do to take care of ourselves. And it's no longer this hidden, shameful thing to seek mental health services. Now it's, they take pride in that. They talk about it. They say, have you gone to see Dr. Sarah? You know, oh man, I've got my appointment coming up. They talk so much more openly. And I would say that's really only been the last 2, 3, 4 years that I've really seen that shift.
And I'll tell you where it's really been cool to see it is the ones who are really leading the charge are the like the SWAT dogs.
Yeah. Oh wow.
Yeah. I mean we're
SWAT guys who tough.
Yeah.
SWAT.
We're saying we gotta go get help. We gotta do a debrief. You need to go see Dr. Sarah or some other therapist. And I think for me, I knew we were getting to that point when I was still with Aurora. I remember passing an officer in the hallway and I stopped to talk to him. I said, "Hey, I haven't seen you for a while. How you doing?" And he goes, Chief, I've been struggling with some stuff, my family and I, but you know, we went to the department psychologist and blah, 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 blah. And I'm looking at him, I'm going, "You're telling your chief you went to the psychologist." And the fact that he felt comfortable telling me that and knowing that I wasn't going to turn around and put him on a desk or take his gun and badge away, you know, that I thought was really cool.
Well, I think a lot of it too, and I talk to a lot of officers, like I know you too, I talk to officers from all around the country, and I'm glad to hear that. I still think that there's agencies out there that don't have the culture like Aurora PD, my PD, because I talk to cops where they're still scared to death to say anything. Mm-hmm. And like you both know, I mean, it has to start from the top. If the senior leadership in an organization is on board with being open and transparent, I mean, not giving details, obviously, but supporting officers if they're struggling. I mean, that's 90% of it. But I talk to officers that are scared because they're afraid of how their administration is going to treat them, because they're speaking from experience, because it's the culture within that organization.
It is the culture. And the problem is, you're absolutely right, we need it to come from the top down. But we also have to be mindful that the folks who are in those upper positions did not grow up with this.
Sure.
They come from the culture of suck it up. We don't talk about this shit, you know? So it's tough because we need them to turn the tide, but this does not feel comfortable for them. And so I do a lot of work with really educating chiefs. We can't just expect them to understand it because they don't, they did not grow up with this. So we really have to educate them and teach them how to support these programs and teach some of that dialogue. I did a presentation for the county sheriffs of Colorado not that long ago, and it was amazing to me how just giving them, we did like a 2-hour presentation on mental health, and they were so receptive, but so many of them thought, "I've never heard this before. I've never heard it taught in a way that feels authentic and that I can kind of get behind." It was really cool. They want to support this, but you're right. They don't all know the language and they don't know how.
Well, the fact that they were receptive to it is a huge part of it, because again, I've talked to officers who, again, this is just their perspective, so I'm getting one side of it, but they don't think that their administration is receptive.
Yeah.
And I'm sure just statistically speaking, there probably are organizations out there that are still like that are antiquated. And just because, I mean, I grew up, you know, I mean, I'm 52 years old, so I grew up in the environment of you suck it up, you don't talk about it. But still, as we grow and adapt, especially in today's environment where there's so many resources, there's you out there, Dr. Sarah, there's Nick, there's Code 4 counseling, there's all different types of resources out there. There's really no excuse anymore to not take advantage of everything out there, especially the environment we live in.
I agree. I would say that what we really need is more culturally competent clinicians. There's tons of resources. You're right. There's podcasts like yours that address these issues. There's amazing resources around the country, but I do think there are still pockets of the country that don't have clinicians.
Yeah.
They don't have people who are specially trained. They show up at an office, they talk about a trauma, they make their therapist cry, and they say, "Well, what was the point of that? I mean, that didn't get me anywhere. Now I go home and, you know, I'm just going to suck it back in." So one of the things that was really important to us that we created was a specialized program to teach clinicians how to support this culture. Mm-hmm. So through CSU Global, we partnered with CSU Global about 2 years ago. And we now have a specific program. It's a master's degree in counseling for those who want to serve the military and responder cultures. And we teach that cultural competence. It's built into every program. It started in September of last year. We have roughly 50 students and it's growing every month. Wow. And even to me, just thinking we're going to have 50 new clinicians that spread out around the country and support these cultures. That's so exciting to me because I know that that's a need that's still very much there.
And these are clinicians, a lot of them who have been there and done that.
Yeah.
And I know one person who will not mind me sharing his name is Dan Bright. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're familiar with Dan. Dan is in the program. And you look at someone like Dan, who has been such an example of resilience to you know, cops and their families, and to think how successful he will be for folks who, you know, are struggling.
Yeah.
And his wife's in the program too, and she's gonna take over the world, the two of them together. He's got an appropriate amount of fear of his wife. He's the boss in that family, and they are amazing inspiration to the responding community.
Well, I learned a long time ago that if mom ain't happy, nobody's happy.
Be afraid.
Yeah, be afraid. Now, and everything, folks, for the listener out there, everything like that they mentioned with CSU Global is going to be linked up in the show notes. Do you think both of you?
Force code with my eye. I'm afraid.
Do you think the last? And this is a dumb question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you think that, you know, COVID and recent civil unrest and all this divisiveness in the country has led to a lot more mental health challenges for not just the country, but our, you know, our first responders?
Yeah, I will tell you, you know, COVID certainly played a factor, but when the riot started, my phone was ringing off the hook especially from cops from around the country. I was talking to a lot of chiefs from major cities who were right in the thick of everything. A lot of the phone calls I've been taking from officers and their families have been about, I want to get out of the profession. I'm afraid to be in this profession, or I don't want my spouse or partner to be in this profession anymore. And so we've been spending a lot of time with folks, and there are folks who we try to get them to kind of just slow their roll a little bit. Like, don't make a knee jerk reaction that you're going to end up regretting. Let's think this through. And we've had some that have come back around and it's like, okay, I'm re-energized. I still want to do this job. And then we've had some who have said, you know what, it's best I move on and go to another profession, knowing at the same time that if the bug really hits them in the future, they can always come back. But, mm-hmm. But the biggest thing is making sure that they're really processing and thinking it through. The families have really had it tough. We know tons of families who have either been directly threatened, indirectly threatened, their kids have been bullied online or, you know, at school and things like that because their mother or father is a police officer. And that's been really difficult for the families to navigate. But I think things are settling down just a little bit.
Mm-hmm. It's definitely been tough. We do see a lot of people because, again, we know in this profession, any helper profession, it is a calling. It's in their core. They have a heart for service. Mm-hmm. And to have a heart for service and then have the community that you serve say, we don't want you anymore, that's hugely upsetting. It's really hard for them to understand, well, this is my meaning and purpose is to serve. And now you're telling me I'm a bad human or that you don't want me or that you're afraid of me. That's very distressing. So we have seen a huge escalation in need around that issue.
And that's what, you know, I think we live in a different, obviously the world changes day by day, but you know, things have changed so much from when I was in. We didn't have social media the way it is now. We didn't have, you know, politicians on both sides, and I'm not trying to get political, but I mean, politicians openly advocating this mantling of the police department. So, I talked to officers again, and 90% of them, Chief, or 95% of them, a very large percentage are looking for an exit ramp. And I'm the thing I'm afraid, thank God, brave men and women are still getting into it. But, you know, recruitment efforts, as you probably know, I mean, they're falling flat. I mean, I was talking to a buddy of mine who's in a large agency in the South. They're 400 cops down.
Well, I think what's really frustrating, you know, the cops who've got, you know, 5 to 10 years on and maybe started in their early 20s, they're in a position, they can jump out, they can maybe join, you know, a federal law enforcement agency or something like that, and they're probably going to be okay. And then you on the other side of the spectrum, you have officers who are eligible to retire, and they were thinking before all this, I'll do another couple of years, and then they're saying that not worth it, I'm out now. And I can't imagine a worse situation than feeling stuck in a career or a job that you don't want to be at. And so again, that's where a lot of the conversations that we're having with these folks is to really kind of go back and think about, why was it you got into this profession in the first place? What were the risks that you knew? Everybody knows the risks of getting hurt, right? They accept that the first day, but what they really didn't count on was kind of like what Sarah just said, this mass kind of, you know, vitriol hatred towards them and lack of support, you know, and sadly, you know, it takes Officer Talley up in Boulder to start getting people to recognize,
yeah,
oh man, look at the sacrifices these guys made. Here's a cop who ran into a situation when everyone was running out and kept, you know, other people from dying. And it shouldn't require a cop being killed in the line of duty for people to appreciate what our cops do every single day.
Yeah. And I talk about this a lot on my shows, Chief, and I do believe that the vast majority of people in this country do support mm-hmm. law enforcement. I wish that they were more vocal about it. But I also believe that in the profession is, and I know the profession is strong and resilient. And we go through, as you both know, we go through peaks and valleys. And mm-hmm. we're in a valley right now, but we'll come out this and we'll survive, because I know a lot of people want the police gone, but a lot of people don't realize the community needs the police and the police need the community.
Absolutely.
And so it's just an interesting time, obviously, to say mm-hmm. the least, that we're in right now.
Absolutely.
It is.
Mm-hmm. What do you think, again, we obviously talked about some challenges. What do you think some other challenges are going to be going forward for law enforcement in the future, both of you, if anybody wants to take on that one?
I think Nick mentioned it earlier. I think really figuring out how to make this profession more family friendly is probably the best way I would put it. I think agencies need to understand when you bring an officer or deputy on board, you bring their whole family. This is those of us who live this life, we know it's the blue family, and we know that it's a lifestyle in so many ways. And I think agencies can do a better job of supporting families. That's something we push quite a bit with the agencies we support. We do date nights for our agencies. We encourage them to bring their spouse and partners. We have dinner together, we break bread, we share stories, and we support their relationship. We talk about how to have healthy marriages and healthy relationships. It's one of the myths that Nick knows that drives me nuts. In law enforcement, they've been taught for so long that they're somehow incapable of having a successful relationship. Yeah. So they start this profession, they're told that you have this extraordinarily high risk of getting divorced. And so they assume, well, this is just the way it is.
Yeah.
Instead, we really focus on, you know, kind of taking it a more positive direction and talking about how much great research there is on how to have a successful relationship.
Yeah.
I think the more we can take care of the whole human, that will make them better at their job, better in the community, and stay happy and healthy longer when we take care of them as a whole person and not just in their role in the job.
Yeah. And I would take it a step further. I would go back to the academies. And,
yeah.
You know, and I know with post requirements and you know, curriculums and hour, I mean, I get that. But I would go back if we could, if it's feasible, and I think it is, anything's possible, to make this a portion in an academy, because most, as you know, Chief, I mean, most departments don't have in-house academies like Aurora or Denver. You know, they're shipping their, you know, their non-post people off to a sponsored academy. And I would say, or even in-house academies, make this a block.
What's fantastic, and to speak to that, I'm currently on the Colorado Post sub for mental health. Yeah. And they are pushing hard for this. So what we're looking at doing in Colorado Post and some of the other states are really all working together. Colorado is looking at having 12 hours of mental health nutrition, physical health. They're looking at really expanding that section of their academy. And they're looking at creating a train-the-trainer model so that
Excellent.
We have more standardization across academies on what this sort of training looks like. So you don't have great training in some and it's just a checkbox in others, but you're right. It has to start in the academy, and it's been just a checkbox, I think, in the past. And to see us really saying, look, this needs to be expanded and it needs to be better.
We just can't ignore it anymore.
Oh, absolutely.
We just can't. It's, you know, we did a good job when I was a young officer, you know, pushing it down there. But, you know, everybody, it all comes back with me too. I mean, it's, you know, there's only so much water you can put in that cup before it starts overflowing.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, so, I mean, much needed. So let's pivot a little bit and let's talk about Code 4 counseling again, and specifically what services you offer with that, Sarah.
So this started, like I said, we started this back in September 2017. I laugh. He's the dreamer in the relationship. He's got the big ideas. And early on in our relationship, this was something that we talked about. He said, you can do this better. Go out and make, you know, start your own firm. And so I did. So we teamed up on this. And we absolutely love what we've accomplished in just a short amount of time. So what Code 4 Counseling does is we team up with agencies around the state of Colorado. And we've also worked with agencies in other states to do training, in particular out of state as well. So we do a lot of in-service training on mental health and resiliency, post-traumatic growth, the date nights I talked about, kind of that family piece. So we do a ton of training. We also, again, contract with certain agencies to provide mental health care to their agencies. Here in Colorado, there's the DOLA grant, and a lot of agencies rely on that funding to be able to provide mental health sessions to folks so they can come in individually as a couple and get that extra layer of support. So we do counseling, we do training, we do wellness checks for agencies. You know, we've really seen a huge increase in what people ask for and what they need in terms of mental health, and we try to keep being innovative and keep coming up with new trainings and ways of providing that care.
And I was checking out the website. It looks like you got some amazing clinicians on board.
We do. We're very, very blessed. We try to make sure that our clinicians are all culturally competent, that they have that background in working with this population, and have a variety of services that they can provide. EMDR is a specialized trauma therapy that a lot of responders respond very well to. So we make sure that our clinicians are trained in EMDR. We offer Gottman training to our staff so that they can provide really quality care to a couple. So we really look at what are the best strategies for providing care and making sure that we have a variety, because not one, you know, method is going to work
sure,
for everyone.
Sure.
So we try to make sure that we can cover a lot of different bases.
Excellent. And everything is going to be linked up in the show notes for the listeners. Chief, if I came to you, or somebody came to you, and you probably had this question before, and said, hey, Chief, you've been a police officer, you retired, you had many years on the job, I want to get into law enforcement. What advice would you give that person, sir?
Well, it's funny you ask that, because, you know, people will ask me sometimes, knowing what I know now, and if I were 21 again today, would I go back, would I do the job again? Absolutely. I love this profession. Yes, it had its ups and downs. There were days that, you know, I put my head through drywall. But
I think we all do.
That's what the problem is.
That's the greatest show on earth.
She thought it was termites or something. But, you know, for me, every day was different. Even as a chief and administrator, every day was different. Yeah. And that's what I really loved about the job. And so I guess what I would tell someone who's thinking about it today is, one, really think about it and really do your homework and research, and you know, spend some time doing the ride along, spend some time talking to officers, be careful not to get too caught up, because there is a lot of negativity out there right now also with cops. I mean, and I understand why, but it's also easy to talk to cops that are going to say, oh my God, don't even think about it. Go learn to be a computer tech or something like that. But yeah. You know, to what Sarah said earlier, if you're feeling that calling in your heart, then you know what, do it and give it a try. And it is hard now, but I guess I also look at it for those that are going into it now, they're really not going to know a difference to what you and I, how you and I understood and did police work, right? This is just the way it is. I got body cams now. Yeah. I've got all these expectations. It is just kind of what it is.
Yeah.
You know, so we always want to make sure that, and I've had conversations with folks about that. I've had conversations with parents who are like, my kid now is saying they want to be a cop when all this stuff is going on, and you know, and their parents are cops, and they're like, what do I tell them? I'm like, you got to support them. Don't take that inner energy out, and let them give it a try. Let them give it a try.
That's great advice, and I tell people, you know, look, law enforcement is, and I hate to say it, you know it, Chief, it's a toxic environment. When people don't call us when things are great, they call us when shit hits the fan.
Right.
But I love what you said about, you know, some of the officers out there that are negative. I always tell officers or people who, you know, or when I go into the academies, look, seek out the officers that are go-getters, that are positive, that want to be there. You know, you're the average of the five people you hang out with. Doesn't matter what profession, personal or, professional. Absolutely. Just hang out with those guys. That's what I was so strong with. You know, who was selected in my organization as FTOs, because as you know, those are pivotal roles. And I didn't want somebody that was negative in that role, because you got a new officer, again, preaching to the choir, you got a new officer that comes in and that's their first experience to it, is a negative cop.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. And it's not just the FTOs, it's the first line supervisor.
Exactly.
They don't realize how much influence and how much they set the tone in their sphere of responsibility. And I've gone to roll calls where you'll have that sergeant who's just curmudgeon and everything else. And guess what? All the officers, you know, in that squad act as if, you know, the world sucks. And then you go to another roll call where the sergeant is gung-ho, he's debriefing calls that were the night before. He's given, you know, attaboys and attagirls, and the troops are laughing and they're ready to go out there and hit the pavement. And that's what you want. And I, you know, what I try to tell first line supervisors is, yeah, I get that things are tough right now, but you know, you have a responsibility to your troops, not only to keep them safe, but to keep them thinking positively, because they've got to be alert out there. There's so many unexpecteds out there. And if they're dug in deep in this negativity, they're not going to be as alert to the dangers that are going to be around them.
Yeah, absolutely.
And no one learns from that. No one learns from that constant negativity. You know, mm-hmm. For people who are formal or informal leaders, look at the highest achieving folks in any industry. They surround themselves with someone who inspires them,
absolutely,
coaches them, mentors them. They don't hire people to follow them around and beat them down. That doesn't succeed in any industry. And so someone who really wants to come into this culture and thrive personally, but also help the agency thrive, you've got to look at, how do you coach? How do you mentor? Yeah. How do you truly lead? And I think we've all seen agencies and groups that can really thrive when you balance it. There is a lot of toxicity. There is a lot of negativity, but there's a lot. This blue family is the best thing in the whole world. Yeah. You get them together and you get them loving on each other. You don't see that anywhere else. And so it's a beautiful thing when you see it at its best.
Yeah. Amazing. So if there's listeners out there, Dr. Sarah and Nick, who are struggling right now with whatever it is, what advice would you give them?
I think we've summarized it so well. There's lots of different options. Look for the leaders, look for the people who inspire you, the mentors, formal or informal, and seek that help. It is out there. There's firms like Code 4 Counseling. There are more and more of those sorts of resources out there. And give it a try. You know, seek that outside support. It's very valuable and it gives you a chance to reset. Check out your peer support program. If your agency doesn't have peer support, look for peer supporters in another agency.
Yeah.
I think anymore, there's lots of different resources that people can access. And if they just don't have anything local, then look for the podcast, look for the folks who kind of broadcast this material out. I think there's lots of different ways someone can get help. And I think the more they're willing to really seek it out, they can find it. If they can't, tell them to contact us and we'll help them find it wherever they're at. We'll help them. Yeah. We'll figure it out.
Yes. You two are amazing. Such a great show, such great and important information for the listeners. If people want to reach out to you, Sarah and Nick, what's the website again?
Code4counseling.com. Hopefully anyone who's in this profession, a lot of them should know what Code 4 stands for. So code4counseling.com for the website, or Code 4 Counseling on Facebook. We're very active there. We try to put out a lot of great resources for folks there as well.
Love the name, how apropos. And again, thank you both for coming on the show. You both, again, are amazing. Anything I can do for any of you, or for both of you, please let me know. Much success to you both. I would love to have you back on in the future. And again, if you need anything, please reach out to me. Thanks for being on.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.